97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Saturday or Sunday, depending on when you're listening to us. It is Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. Happy that you're here.
I'm just coming out of a trip to Fancoma. All the turkey I'm eating. Yeah. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. Bo Matthews, Mark Cox here. Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
Yeah, welcome in. We got a great show for you today as well. We're going to talk to Amy Swearer coming up from the Heritage Foundation. She's a legal expert, and she's kind of taking a look not only at this Ahmaud Arbery case and the Kyle Rittenhouse case and all these self-defense cases and what's at issue, but also the challenge before the United States Supreme Court when it comes to the Second Amendment that they're currently considering with concealed carry up in New York. So that's coming up here in a couple minutes.
Yeah, and what I like about her is they aggregate a lot of stories of self-defense using firearms across the country, but it's so rare to hear about a story unless it's a Rittenhouse or an Arbery story where it's a it just overtakes all the news. So I think for people to understand that it happens pretty often, she'll be able to speak to that. Amy Swearer, and I don't know how you found her, but that's a good guess.
she's fantastic, no doubt about it. So, Bo, I have to tell you, I went deer hunting again. I've been in the woods three or four times now. I saw a 8-point buck. Right?
Yeah.
You're going to love this.
You saw it.
Saw my 8-point buck. Have it in my sights.
Uh-oh. Here we
go. It's sideways. It's broadside. It's about 75 yards. It's perfect. I pulled the trigger, and I hear a very loud click.
What?
Had a misfire.
No.
And I immediately thought, well, I just forgot to chamber around, right? It's a 308. I forgot to chamber around, so I pop it open. Look, there's a round in it. So I knew immediately there'd been a misfire. But when I tried to work the action, another shell popped up and jammed the gun.
Oh,
so
no.
The deer stand there looking at me at this point. I've got to turn the gun over to get the other shell out so I can rechamber a load. And I bring it back up. And at this point, it's elbows and, rear ends, bouncing off.
It laughed at you and ran away.
It did, but here's what I did. I can take credit for this. It ran up the hill. There's another hunter whose property is next to ours up at the top of the hill in his tree stand with his young nephew who shot the buck. So he got his very first deer courtesy of me.
He got yours.
He got my deer because
Elmer
Fudd, my gun
misfired. I think
misfired.
He was hollering, Elmer Fudd, nice try.
I know. It was a bummer.
Man,
but,
just wasn't meant to be.
Karma, that deer had a death wish, and it got it.
You know what, though? The good news is the McRib is back. So
yeah, thank you. Bo Matthews, ladies and gentlemen.
Speaking of fast food, I do want to tell you about a win. So here in this building on the main floor, there is a KFC that's been going in, right? The signs are up. I get all excited. I'm, texting people in the building, hey, the sign's up. Mm-hmm. And then we had a question, was Colonel Sanders part of the marketing? Yes, he is. His face is on the building. I pull in the other day, and I see them hanging this banner, the first 50 get free chicken for a year.
Ooh.
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool they're doing that.
I saw the line for it. Yeah.
So I come up here. We're prepping for St. Louis Talks with Carol and Ryan. And about 10 after 10 that morning, she goes, both of them go, hey, why don't you go down and talk to the people in line? It's like, well, that's okay. It's not really news. It's not breaking news. It's
man
on
the street, though.
Right. Man in the field.
Ah. Anytime there's a new restaurant in downtown St. Louis, that's breaking news.
Especially fast food.
Hey, thank you. There's not much of it.
Anyway, long story short, I go down there to talk to the people, and next thing I know, a guy in a suit's walking up and hands me a card and says, you're number 43.
Wow.
I was just there as man on the street. Doing the job, recording, and it was so great.
You made yourself part of the story.
I know, and that's what against the rules, right?
So, a free chicken sandwich every day for a year?
No, you get a free $5 fill up once a week for 52 weeks. And you do the math, that's like, what, $250, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a win, but I was just there and just...
And I bet
collateral damage. It says Tuesdays only at this location only.
Okay.
But the people I'm talking to in line, they were so excited. and they were like, I'll see you here Tuesday. I'll see you here Tuesday. And I'm
see
like,
you Tuesday every
and
Tuesday.
Carol and Ryan could have gone down there with you.
Yeah.
And they would have been 44 and 45.
They thought they were just punking me. Yeah, go down there and do that, Bo. I'm like, okay. So right. I walk away, and boy, you should have seen the look on their face. You got free chicken. I was
you won.
Yeah, I did.
You won.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's convenient.
Congratulations. I think that's great. I mean, now you're so full of turkey right now, you probably couldn't have eaten.
You know what? I eat poultry so much. I got feathers that actually grow on the back of my neck here. And I shave them when I shave the rest of it. Anyway, you know, this is a crazy weekend. I don't know if you're big on out black market shop or Black Friday shopping and crazy stuff like that.
Black market. I'm into black market.
No, don't say that out loud.
The dark web.
I mean, so many people shop online. I don't even know how some stores are surviving.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Black Friday specials have been going for 2 months anyway. This is nuts.
Last week, on Monday of last week, I got a flyer in the mail from Walmart that said the Black Friday sale started that evening at 7 p.m. Like, why the hell would I get up at 0:30 on Friday morning
right
to get
after
up
Thanksgiving.
If I can shop online on Monday? Not a chance.
100%.
It's fine.
And over the weekend, depending again on what day you're listening to this, Small Business Saturday is a thing.
Right.
And hopefully people took part or will take part or have taken part because we got to support mom and pop. I mean, they're struggling. Some are staying afloat, but when you got behemoths like Amazon and Walmart and Target, it's just, I don't know how they're staying alive. But the thing about mom and pop stores is you do find unique stuff.
Yes.
Very unique stuff. So.
Well, I admire those people because they put it all on the line. And I won't get into the politics of it today, but whenever we talk about minimum wage and forcing this and forcing that, the people they're talking about, most of these people are small business owners who put their everything on the line to make that business work.
Yes.
And that's who you're punishing when you're doing things like that. So
they're trying to live the American dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Very much so.
That's what it comes
and more
down
than
to.
Likely they're taking care of their people anyway.
Of course. Of course. And I think the ones that are surviving, I think that shows that they are taking care of their people.
Well, speaking of small business owners, coming up a little later, we're going to talk to Jesse Rolfs from Razorback Armory, runs his small business there, and boy, do they do great work. We're going to talk to him about, you know, some of the training and the question of, we had a guest on from Rutgers the other day who was talking about kind of trying to classify first-time gun owners. We're going to ask Jesse about that because he's dealing with these folks a lot, particularly the past year. We'll ask him his opinion.
Absolutely. All right. And coming up next, we'll talk to Amy Swearer, a legal fellow in the Meast Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Stay right there.
The Great Outdoors for a reason. We like to talk about the Second Amendment and those big issues. Now, you know, I'm in here along with Bo and Carl this morning. One thing that I focused on the past, I don't know, 10 years I've been in radio is the fact that since the Heller decision, the Supreme Court has not really readdressed that issue of how far restrictions can go on your Second Amendment rights, right?
Right.
And we've been waiting on that. And there have been several cases where they've had an opportunity to do it and they've refused to take those cases. Now there's a big one coming up. They've heard the arguments already and it's out of the case, out of New York. And, you know, they've got some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country in New York, just sort of like they do in Chicago. And yet you've got gun crime continues to soar.
Or California.
Lots of places like that where you have to prove there's a threat against you before you can go argue that you might need to carry a gun.
I think the part of the problem is that the bad guys don't watch the news. They don't know the updates. That's a concern. How do they know?
It's a good point.
It's the law-abiding citizens that are penalized in this case, or in many cases, when it comes to Second Amendment and protecting yourself and your family.
Well, and then you get cases like the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which focused on self-defense, and it got muddied up by the fact that Kyle, being there as a 17-year-old holding a scary black semi-automatic rifle, through everything, it distracted from the issue. The issue was, do you have a right to defend yourself if you're attacked? Had he not had a gun, he might have been killed that night.
Oh.
There's I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the left, in my opinion, used that as a distraction to the real issue. Because if you are allowed to defend yourself and you're allowed to carry a weapon to a protest like that, that reduces their power to disrupt, is what it does.
It equalizes it, for sure.
To some extent, it certainly does. We have Amy Swearer with us right now. She's a legal fellow at the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Heritage.org is the website. Amy, welcome into the Second Amendment Radio. We're glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You know, I guess just for a moment, let me get your comment on the self-defense argument that got an acquittal for Kyle Rittenhouse.
Sure. So I think anybody who had been paying attention to the trial, who had seen the videos, who tried to come at this with, you know, without preconceived notions of what they wanted the verdict to be, and who had any basic understanding of self-defense law, much less, you know, specifically how it works in Wisconsin, I think anybody, you know, falling into those categories watching this was not surprised by it. You know, I think that was the most reasonable outcome in this case. And it makes sense, right? I mean, regardless of what you think about whether Rittenhouse should have been there to begin with, regardless of any accusations that, you know, may have been made about, oh, well, he was instigating things earlier. You know, at the time that this shooting happened, he was actively running away, being chased for 40 plus yards by someone who, you know, witnesses said was shouting that he was going to kill him and tried to take his gun. And then in every other case, you know, again, it's a crowd of people following him, pushing him to the ground. He doesn't shoot at anybody who is not actively and imminently a danger to him, either by, you know, threatening to hit him with a skateboard, by pointing a gun at his face. This was a classic case of pure self-defense. And I think that became very evident throughout the trial.
I wish the rest of the world would believe those words you just said, because even after the verdict came down, there were several news agencies still using the term white supremacist, and then we had the benefit of Kyle Rittenhouse actually talking to Tucker Carlson. And he said in that interview he supports Black Lives Matter. He wants to help his fellow man, and yet the narrative that is on so many platforms is still wrong. It's still, and you know, actually, I think he's got a chance to make those people accountable in the near future.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting watching the narrative as it plays out on social media and then in the news media, where there seems to be like people watched two very different trials. So I'm fairly convinced that it was, you know, people who actually watched the trial versus people who did not actually watch the trial. Because, I mean, just the things that you see, where there are still people to this day who, I mean, after the fact, you had large news media organizations printing that he was acquitted of killing three black men.
Right.
Everybody involved was white. You know, this idea of, oh, these were unarmed peaceful protesters. These were rioters. The first individual he shot, the prosecution essentially said in their opening statement, look, yeah, he did a lot of bad things, and if he had, you know, lived, we probably would have charged him with a bunch of crimes that night. You know, these were riots. This was the active destruction of a car lot. You know, these were simply not these unarmed peaceful protests where Kyle Rittenhouse showed up to just shoot black people because he didn't like the movement. And so you're seeing, again, still now, these absurd framings of what happened. And again, I think it's that you have people who just didn't bother to watch the trial or even care remotely about what the facts of the case were.
Yeah, we're talking with attorney Amy Swearer from the Heritage Foundation. And Amy, the question now is, who can Kyle Rittenhouse hold accountable? Can he go? I know he can go after the media organizations. We saw that Nick Sandman from the Covington Catholic situation certainly did that successfully, and I think some of those cases are still pending. Can he go after individual politicians, for example, particular congresspeople or others who he felt might have defamed him during all this?
I mean, he can certainly try. It is an incredibly high standard. Those sorts of cases are notoriously difficult. I mean, people will point to some similarities with the Nicholas Sandman case. Though, you know, again, if you remember, he didn't necessarily win those. He just got a settlement, and which, you know, I'm sure in his mind was pretty significant.
Yeah.
But they are notoriously difficult to win. You know, and there would be questions of, is he a public figure? You know, I think, frankly, what was interesting watching some of the recent interviews with Rittenhouse was some of the remarks he had about his first attorneys and some of the arguments over, you know, where did my several millions of dollars in bail money that was raised go? You know, so, but I understand the point of, you know, this being more about who can he hold accountable in terms of the slanders against him. But frankly, I would imagine at this point, he's also just tired.
Yes.
You know, I can't imagine a year and a half of the ordeal he has gone through, and that there's a part of him that's tired and just wants to move on with his life. So we'll certainly see, but they are very difficult cases to win.
Very much so. You know, in New York, I mentioned this coming into the interview here. The Supreme Court's heard its arguments now over this New York law. What I love about the folks up there at Heritage is you guys back up your positions with facts. And, you know, in looking at this law in New York, we talked about it on this show before, I know, in my own radio program. You had to prove that you were being threatened by someone in order to get a concealed carry permit to carry outside of your home. That's the question here, correct?
Yeah, so New York has, it's known as a may issue state, so you don't just have a right to get a permit, but you also have to show what's known as good cause. And New York defines that in such a way that essentially what this means is if you want to carry a gun in public to defend yourself, you need to go to your local licensing official and beg, borrow, and steal. And I'm not being so dramatic there because there are a lot of bribery scandals involved in this. And essentially prove that you have some unique, significant threat to your life above and beyond just generally being afraid of crime or living in a high crime area. And even then, they have the discretion to say, we don't think you are sufficiently reasonably afraid. You know, get out of here, be gone, you know, lowly peasant. So that's issue.
That's kind of like anti-vaxxers saying, this is my religious exemption. And they're like, no, we're not going to believe that.
Yeah, we don't want to. We don't want to talk about that. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So I mean, the reality in New York is that, especially in New York City, where this is enforced, I think, much more strictly than maybe in some more rural parts of New York. The reality is, if you are just your typical, ordinary, law-abiding citizen, you're not getting permission from the government to exercise your Second Amendment rights in public.
Right.
You know, and just insane arguments that New York would bring up to defend this to say, oh, well, if you live in urban areas, it's fine. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a high crime area, because if it's highly densely populated, well, there are more cops. There are more people around. And that's going to, you know, what does that say to the people who are, you know, still living in those high crime areas? And yeah, there are cops around. It's still a high crime area. I'm still statistically more likely to be victimized than in other areas. So just some just hogwash of arguments being brought up to justify telling people, you're not really afraid. You don't really have a right to defend yourself in public, you know, in the most reasonable, efficient way under the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get those opinions out in 2022.
Yeah, no kidding. And what we talk about, self-defense, it's a natural right. I love that we get to repeat that over and over again. What you guys have done up there at Heritage, I love this commentary you guys had the other day, is to specifically show examples around the country of defensive gun use that mm-hmm. that undercut the argument in New York. I mean, I hope this is going to be a slam dunk in the Supreme Court, although I've thought that before and been sorely disappointed.
Yeah, well, so you mentioned our it's actually a monthly series that we do, and it's based on a much bigger project we have, our defensive gun use database that we, you know, just basic Google searches just to find the stories of defensive gun use that if you blinked on the nightly news, if it got reported at all in the media, in a significant way, you probably missed it.
Yeah.
And so you can toggle with the map and sort of see what's going on in your state and your neighborhood. And it's really awesome. But yeah, you know, in terms of New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, I think, you know, you get some hints from what you saw in oral arguments when you've got the chief justice, you know, sort of hammering New York a little bit on this. And he's not even the swing vote at this point. You know, I think he'd probably be like the sixth justice. I feel pretty confident in it. I think that the panic that a lot of gun control groups are going through, you know, sort of indicative of the panic that they're feeling, you know, that they're not feeling super great about this decision.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that the question will be sort of how broad of an opinion is it?
Well,
you know, do they write it very narrowly or do they go broad so that, you know, other states start taking notice and say, oh, you know, maybe we should take the Second Amendment seriously.
You know, and really, the world that is anti-gun may think the Kyle Rittenhouse case is just a one-off, but the list of the examples that you present in your article, that it happens a lot where somebody rightfully defends themselves with a firearm. I will tell you this, Amy, that I just drove through the entire state of New York, driving from St. Louis through Indiana and all that stuff, but through Western New York. I was just amazed how beautiful it felt, like Colorado with the elevations and the colors and the trees were awesome. And I'm thinking to myself, why is 8 million people piled on top of each other in New York City? Move out here. You got a whole state to enjoy.
But the gun laws are probably just as restrictive up there. It's a state law, correct?
So it is the laws generally apply statewide. But what's interesting is because it gives local license with concealed carry, at least it gives local licensing officials a lot of discretion.
Sure.
There are a lot of disparities. You're much more likely to get that permit in counties outside of New York City itself than New York City. Seriously, like, unless you are rich, white, famous, or bribed somebody, you're probably not getting that permit.
Or you're with the mafia, then you don't care about those permits.
Right.
But, you know, just, hey, I did want to mention to the listeners of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, just a couple of instances. October 1st, Port Arthur, Texas. Two armed persons attempted to hold up a fast food restaurant. A customer intervened, shooting at them with his own firearm until they fled. Police say both would-be robbers were struck, one fatally, by the customer's gunfire, but reports didn't indicate that anyone else was injured. So that gun control, that control that person using his firearm was reminiscent of how Kyle Rittenhouse was defending himself. He was accurate. He was safe. He had his, you know, he didn't have his finger in the trigger well. Can't say that much about the prosecutor. The other story I wanted to mention was October 5th, Marcola, Oregon. Police said a woman shot a man after he strangled her and attempted to hit her with a baseball bat during a domestic dispute. The wounded man was taken to a hospital for treatment, being charged with several felonies after he got out.
Good for her.
And I bring those stories up because it's not just the bad guys that are you know, committing these gun, you know, atrocities. It could be somebody in your own home or in your own neighborhood. And we, you know, we are going to be there quicker, obviously, than the police can get there in a lot of instances.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so just down the list on there, you had an individual in Pennsylvania who was a concealed carry permit holder, stopped what could have been a mass shooting at a mall. Between, of course, you know, a teenager who illegally possessed that gun in the mall.
Right.
You know, got there much, much faster. He was on the scene to end that threat to the public.
Yeah. Amy, I tell you, I hope people go to the Daily Signal and check out your defensive gun use database. It's great background for people to have if they're getting in these conversations around the water cooler, which we hope we're educating people here every weekend on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Amy Swearer, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Amy, again, with the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. You can go to the Daily Signal, and that's sort of their news site for Heritage, and you can find that database there. Good stuff. Okay.
All right, coming up next on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, before we are done for the day, we are going to talk with Jesse Rolfs from Razorback Armory. Of course, I want to put a spotlight on them because they're a sponsor of the program, but I also wanted to talk to him about the people. First-time gun buyers, reflecting back on our conversation we had with the guy from Rutgers last weekend. If you didn't hear that, check that out at the Odyssey app. Otherwise, stay right there. There's more of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors coming up next. Is it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh!
I told Bo. I said you'll know this next one.
Yeah, but I have no knowledge of music. As long as I've been in the music business as a music DJ, I'm horrible. If it's outside of country, I love all music, love rock and roll music, and that's why I go to you, Carl.
Yes,
for that kind of stuff. But this is not rock and roll.
This is the Vince Guaraldi Trio. This is the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving theme.
Nice.
Because it's Thanksgiving weekend.
Hopefully everybody had a great Thanksgiving, and they're all recovering now and exercising.
Okay, so yeah. I will tell you that I'm married to a vegetarian. I've mentioned that before on the program.
Oh, so you have a Thanksgiving like Charlie Brown does?
No.
With like popcorn and jelly beans? And
oh, heck no. No. I got a bird. Matter of fact, I got a bird, and I said, oh, I got a 17-pounder. And Carol Daniel from St. Louis Talk says, so how many people are you feeding? I said, me. So this weekend, I'm still eating turkey, I guarantee you. This segment of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors is brought to you by Razorback Armory. Razorback Armory and DePere is your gun concierge and perfect for holiday shopping. Even if you want to get something and you're like, oh, what is it? What size is it? What model is it? Don't worry. Get a gift card. You're good. And it'll be their favorite gift and they open. Maybe put the gift card in a big giant box with bricks in it. I don't know. Do you? But go to RazorbackArmory.com. And speaking of, we got Jesse from Razorback Armory on the line. And we got to talk. You told me about some great deals that Sig Sauer and Glock brought in, and we're going to get to that, Jesse. I promise you this. But I don't know if you heard the program last weekend, but we were talking to a group from Rutgers University, and I wanted to get your opinion on this piece. Are you open-minded about this?
Well, let's talk about it.
Well, welcome to the program. Happy holidays to you, sir.
Hey, Jesse.
All right. Hey, guys. How you doing?
A new Rutgers study has found that people who bought firearms during the COVID-19 pandemic and national surge in firearm sales tend to be more sensitive to threats and have less emotional and impulse control than firearm owners who did not make a purchase during this time. Your response?
My response? I will tell you this, yes and no. I think a lot of people who made some purchases then were definitely purchasing with emotion and possibly without the proper training and understanding the gun culture are maybe more susceptible or to go that direction. But hopefully they've took some training and they realized that what they did to purchase a firearm or something like that they can defend themselves with and loved ones is a responsibility. It's something that they should, definitely not take lightly, but, get that training, learn the firearm and be responsible with it. But I can definitely see how that study could definitely weigh out. Yes.
Yeah, I think impulse control is called trigger discipline, isn't it?
Exactly.
biggest impulse problem I have is not buying a gun every time I go to the store.
Well, we don't discourage that.
I'm sure you don't.
And I'll tell you, I get customers in the shop a lot that they're like, hey, this guy was trying to break into my car last night. I'm going to buy a gun. I'm like, okay, that's good. But this, okay, you can't shoot him, okay? He's not threatening your life. He's unfortunately, he's in your driveway. Hopefully your car's locked. He's not, rummaging through your property, but you can't open the door and start sending rounds, and it's funny. It's not really funny, but we have to explain that to some people that's not legal. You cannot do that. If you do that, when the cops show up, you're going to be the one in handcuffs.
That's true.
Try to explain them gun ownership. So I said, there has to be a threat against you, okay, a loved one, defensive property doesn't work.
That's true. And there was an instance of that not too awful long ago in Jeff County where a guy saw on his Ring doorbell somebody was breaking into his car. He comes out of his home with his firearm, and immediately the bad guy, no hesitation at all, just starts shooting at the house. When you're a responsible gun owner, you're thinking, okay, I got to take information in.
Yeah.
I've got to do this right. No. They're not doing that. The bad guys are just going to start shooting. So you're not looking, and you're whether you get hit or not. I don't think the guy got hit, but that's a pretty scary situation. So yeah, if somebody's stealing your property, let them steal it. I mean, hopefully you've got your insurance paid up.
Exactly. That is honestly where, and law enforcement will tell you this. That's where you need to contact law enforcement. Give them as much information as you can so that they can, do their job. They can try to get there, intercept them, at least cut, flood the area with people, try to stop what's going on. But once you introduce yourself in that situation, You may not be looking for a gunfight, but you might be in one.
That's true. Yeah.
And you were safe inside the house. Now, I'm not, you know, I don't advocate for this, but you were safe inside the house. If they weren't coming in your home, you know, to hurt you or a loved one, like Bo was saying, you know, it sucks to make an insurance claim, but it's better than, you know, having your loved ones have to buy a casket.
Yep, that's a good point.
Especially if you weren't ready for it.
Well, we're talking to Jesse Rolfs from Razorback Army. So, Jesse, you know, I don't know if I've ever even asked somebody this question who sells guns. Do you have that do you and your employees have that conversation with somebody when they buy? Do you ask if it's their first gun? If they need instruction, do you encourage them to go and get beginning handgun classes and stuff like that?
Yes. I mean, it's not our first question, like, hey, are you a new gun owner? But you can kind of tell, you know, just being in the industry long enough.
Yeah.
But it's we talk a lot about this and done a lot of things with different people on this, that, you know, the first time gun owner, male, female, whoever, there's a lot of anxiety walking into a gun shop to buy that. We try to, you know, lessen that anxiety. And so you don't want to come right out and say, oh, are you a new gun owner? You know, you don't know anything about guns, you know. So just, you know, but to take them through the process to make sure that what they're, you know, you're meeting expectation. You know, if you're going to buy a firearm, that's great. If you're going to take it home and put it in a drawer and pray you never use it, it's not a good idea. You know, so that they're, you know, once they buy the firearm, okay, you know, if you're going to go to the range, you're going to need some eye and ear protection. You know, it's a good idea to have a range bag. It's, you know, to kind of give them that stuff that a lot of gun owners just take for granted, you know, because we've been in the gun culture forever. But so we do try to have those conversations with people, and whether it's their first gun or their 15th gun, or maybe it's a different gun. It's a gun that they have never purchased before, and it's a different operation, you know, different operating system. So to kind of, you know, give them as much information as we can, but so that they're comfortable. It doesn't feel like you're pushing things on them. But yeah, definitely.
Wouldn't you say, Jesse, that just think back in the last, let's say, year, 2 years, or in your career in this world of guns, wouldn't you say that most people are pretty humble and they'll say, hey, this is the first time I'm buying a gun? I mean, they're pretty open about that, wouldn't you say, as opposed to you having to stereotype or profile, if you will?
No, that is true. There's a lot of people will tell you, hey, I've never owned a gun. They walk in and they lead. Like, I've never owned a gun before. I'm kind of looking. And we're like, okay, you know, hey, let's show you some guns. What are you interested in? You know, what are you looking for? Is this for concealed carry? Is this for home defense? Is this for target use? You know, are we trying to cover a couple of those bases with one gun? And there are people who do think that they know everything because they've been on the internet and, you know, watched about 30 YouTubes, and now they've gone pro.
And they played some video games too.
And they played video games.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh!
I told Bo and said you'll know this next one.
Yeah, but I have no knowledge of music. As long as I've been in the music business as a music DJ, I'm horrible. If it's outside of country, I love all music, love rock and roll music, and that's why I go to you, Carl.
Yes,
for that kind of stuff. But this is not rock and roll.
This is the Vince Guaraldi Trio. This is the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving theme.
Nice.
Because it's Thanksgiving weekend.
Hopefully everybody had a great Thanksgiving and they're all recovering now and exercising.
Okay, I will tell you that I'm married to a vegetarian. I've mentioned that before on the program.
Oh, so you have a Thanksgiving like Charlie Brown does?
No.
With like popcorn and jelly beans? And
oh, heck no. No. I got a bird. Matter of fact, I got a bird and I said, oh, I got a 17-pounder. And Carol Daniel from St. Louis Talk says, so how many people are you feeding? I said, me. So this weekend, I'm still eating turkey, I guarantee you. This segment of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors is brought to you by Razorback Armory. Razorback Armory and DePere is your gun concierge and perfect for holiday shopping. Even if you want to get something and you're like, oh, what is it? What size is it? What model is it? Don't worry. Get a gift card. You're good. And it'll be their favorite gift they open. Maybe put the gift card in a big giant box with bricks in it. I don't know. Do you? But go to RazorbackArmory.com. And speaking of, we got Jesse from Razorback Armory on the line. And we got to talk. You told me about some great deals that Sig Sauer and Glock brought in, and we're going to get to that, Jesse. I promise you this, but I don't know if you heard the program last weekend, but we were talking to a group from Rutgers University, and I wanted to get your opinion on this piece. Are you open-minded about this?
Well, let's talk about it.
Well, welcome to the program. Happy holidays to you, sir.
Hey, Jesse.
All right. Hey, guys. How you doing?
A new Rutgers study has found that people who bought firearms during the COVID-19 pandemic and national surge in firearm sales tend to be more sensitive to threats and have less emotional and impulse control than firearm owners who did not make a purchase during this time. Your response?
My response? I will tell you this, yes and no. I think a lot of people who made some purchases then were definitely purchasing with emotion and possibly without the proper training and understanding the gun culture are maybe more susceptible or to go that direction. But hopefully they've took some training and they realized that what they did to purchase a firearm or something like that they can defend themselves with and loved ones is a responsibility. It's something that they should, definitely not take lightly, but, get that training, learn the firearm and be responsible with it. But I can definitely see how that study could definitely weigh out. Yes.
Yeah, I think impulse control is called trigger discipline, isn't it?
Exactly.
biggest impulse problem I have is not buying a gun every time I go to the store.
Well, we don't discourage that.
I'm sure you don't.
And I'll tell you, I get customers in the shop a lot that they're like, hey, this guy was trying to break into my car last night. I'm going to buy a gun. I'm like, okay, that's good. But this, okay, you can't shoot him, okay? He's not threatening your life. He's unfortunately, he's in your driveway. Hopefully your car's locked. He's not, rummaging through your property, but you can't open the door and start sending rounds, and it's funny. It's not really funny, but we have to explain that to some people that's not legal. You cannot do that. If you do that, when the cops show up, you're going to be the one in handcuffs.
That's true.
Try to explain them gun ownership. So I said, there has to be a threat against you, okay, a loved one, defensive property doesn't work.
That's true. And there was an instance of that not too awful long ago in Jeff County where a guy saw on his Ring doorbell somebody was breaking into his car. He comes out of his home with his firearm, and immediately the bad guy, no hesitation at all, just starts shooting at the house. When you're a responsible gun owner, you're thinking, okay, I got to take information in.
Yeah.
I've got to do this right. No. They're not doing that. They're the bad guys are just going to start shooting. So you're not looking, and you're whether you get hit or not. I don't think the guy got hit, but that's a pretty scary situation. So yeah, if somebody's stealing your property, let them steal it. I mean, hopefully you've got your insurance paid up.
Exactly. That is honestly where, and law enforcement will tell you this. That's where you need to contact law enforcement. Give them as much information as you can so that they can, do their job. They can try to get there, intercept them, at least cut, flood the area with people, try to stop what's going on. But once you introduce yourself in that situation, you may not be looking for a gunfight, but you might be in one.
That's true. Yeah.
And you are safe inside the house. Now, I'm not, I don't advocate for this, but you are safe inside the house. If they weren't coming in your home, to hurt you or a loved one, like Bo was saying, it sucks to make an insurance claim, but it's better than, having your loved ones have to buy a casket.
Yep, that's a good point.
Especially if you weren't ready for it.
Well, we're talking to Jesse Rolfs from Razorback Army. So, Jesse, I don't know if I've ever even asked somebody this question who sells guns. Do you have that do you and your employees have that conversation with somebody when they buy? Do you ask if it's their first gun? If they need instruction, do you encourage them to go and get beginning handgun classes and stuff like that?
Yes. I mean, it's not our first question, like, hey, are you a new gun owner? But you can kind of tell, just being in the industry long enough.
Yeah.
But it's we talk a lot about this and done a lot of things with different people on this that, the first time gun owner, male, female, whoever, there's a lot of anxiety walking into a gun shop to buy that. We try to lessen that anxiety. And so you don't want to come right out and say, oh, are you a new gun owner? You don't know anything about guns, So just, but to take them through the process to make sure that what they're, you're meeting expectation, if you're going to buy a firearm, that's great. If you're going to take it home and put it in a drawer and pray you never use it, it's not a good idea. You know, so that they're, you know, once they buy the firearm, okay, you know, if you're going to go to the range, you're going to need some eye and ear protection. You know, it's a good idea to have a range bag. It's, you know, to kind of give them that stuff that a lot of gun owners just take for granted, you know, because we've been in the gun culture forever. But so we do try to have those conversations with people, and whether it's their first gun or their 15th gun, or maybe it's a different gun. It's a gun that they have never purchased before, and it's a different operation, you know, different operating system. So to kind of, you know, give them as much information as we can, but so that they're comfortable, it doesn't feel like you're pushing things on them. But yeah, definitely.
Wouldn't you say, Jesse, that just think back in the last, let's say, year, 2 years, or in your career in this world of guns, wouldn't you say that most people are pretty humble and they'll say, hey, this is the first time I'm buying a gun? I mean, they're pretty open about that, wouldn't you say, as opposed to you having to stereotype or profile, if you will?
No, and that is true. There's a lot of people will tell you, hey, I've never owned a gun. They walk in and they lead. Like, I've never owned a gun before. I'm kind of looking. And we're like, okay, you know, hey, let's show you some guns. What are you interested in? You know, what are you looking for? Is this for concealed carry? Is this for home defense? Is this for target use? You know, are we trying to cover a couple of those bases with one gun? And there are people who do think that they know everything because they've been on the internet and, you know, watched about 30 YouTubes, and now they've gone pro.
And they played some video games too.
And they played video games, yeah. And those are, and honestly, those are the ones that are truthfully, I believe, more dangerous than someone who's never owned a gun before, because they feel that they already know things, which are not, you know, generally speaking, not true, you know, and doesn't really play out to reality. But no, I'd say that 90% of new gun owners will tell you that up front, or, you know, and a lot of times they're not just, you know, laser focused, I'm going to buy a gun today. You know, they're kind of going out, they're feeling out the market, they're seeing, you know, what's available. They're, you know, they've done some research online, which is good, but they don't believe that is 100% truth, and they're just running with it.
So if I'm just pulling a name out of my hat, if Alec Baldwin walked into your store tomorrow at Razorback and wanted to buy a gun,
just
what would your
name.
Advice be to him?
My advice would be, well, I mean, honestly, as a gun owner, you know, there's certain safety protocols that should be followed. And I've, you know, the funny thing is on that, I've heard from different people in that industry, people, you know, that are do filming and do all that. And a lot of times when they hand a firearm to an actor, the person handing them the firearm is told them, you know, what it is clear, it is, you know, this is blanks, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, they're then going to act out their scene, whatever they're doing with it. And I've had other people tell me, oh, you should always check it and do everything. I'm assuming these people aren't in the gun culture. I'm assuming these people aren't, you know, he's actually come out against firearms several times.
Yeah.
But the only thing I would ever say is I can't believe that he's pointing it directly at people and pulling the trigger. I know, but again, I wasn't there, don't know the scenario, but that's kind of, you know, even if it was a prop gun and he was supposed to shoot the gun and he didn't know it was loaded with ammo, the fact that he was aiming it at other people to me is alarming, unless that was part of the protocol. Like I said, I wasn't there, but I think they should change that protocol, because I've actually done some work with people. We've supplied firearms to local people making some, you know, local movies. And even when the shot was called for to, when they were filming it, it was going to look like this person was shooting at someone. There was a camera there, but there was not a camera operator. That was a static camera.
Oh, wow.
And they were instructed, and I actually know the guy who pulled the trigger, they were instructed to shoot slightly off to the right. Don't hit the camera. It's very expensive. and this was a lot. And they were using live ammo. It was actually my range that I used to own. And they were shooting, you know, everything was clear. But the level of security for a very low-budget film was ridiculous in comparison to what they just did there and actually shot someone.
Well,
I can't explain that.
A few weeks ago, we had a brush with greatness with Bo Duke of Dukes of Hazzard, John Schneider.
Yeah.
And he did an interview, I want to say it was on Fox, where he said there's free software that you can download the app and actually make it look like your finger is shooting, you know, the fire's coming out of the end of your finger. It has the sound. And, you know, you act the recoil. So there's really no point at all for any kind of even a blank on a movie set with the technology. And that's a free app you can download to your phone.
Oh, yeah.
CGI would be, you know, I mean, the CGI that they can afford for a big production like that, yeah, it had definitely.
Of course. I do think it's ironic, going back to the Rutgers study about, you know, people and their moods and their impulse control. You know, it's ironic that the liberal media, you know, pumps out so much of the stuff on screen that people are seeing the riots and the robberies and the, you know, all this bad stuff, fires burning stuff.
Yeah.
No wonder people are wanting to get out and come see you and protect themselves, for crying out loud. And they're also anti-gun. So why would they be showing? They should be showing rainbows and butterflies and telling us that the world is wonderful. And then people might not think we really need guns. But Lord knows we do. Okay, so we got a couple minutes left. I just want to put the spotlight on Razorback. We're a few weeks out now from Christmas. We got Thanksgiving behind us. Do you still have some of your Glock toys? And I say toys, I mean accessories. Yeah. Six Sauer. They dropped a big load on you guys, right?
Yes. So we did a great promotion. Sig Sauer and Glock both gave us some free goodies to give away with each firearm that we sold. Some free ammo was out with each gun. We're pretty much sold through that. We've got our orders back in to restock. We're definitely going to be restocked for Christmas. And this, you know, the same stocking stuffers, gift cards, you know, all the accessories and different things. We're still good on all that. No problem. We ordered plenty.
Yeah. You can't go wrong.
Yeah. Absolutely.
With a gift like that.
And you know, and really, a lot of people are desensitized. We talked about video games or movies. It desensitizes people, so they think, well, I learned my stuff from Alec Baldwin on a movie.
Don't.
Real life training. Mark, you would agree. Mark is M-A-R-C, which means bad hunter, but the man knows how to protect himself, is my point.
It's Deer 3, Mark 0. I didn't get anything this year. And it wasn't that I missed. I didn't even get a shot. I didn't even see anything.
That's sad.
Yeah, I know.
That's sad. Anyway, Jesse, happy holidays. I will stop in because, you know, I never understood the pocket holster, okay, mm-hmm. until recently it, like, kind of hit me. Can you explain... you know, for those in the state of Missouri where, you know, concealed carry is, you know, is legal and encouraged in some areas, what is the reason for the pocket holster that goes inside your pocket?
So a pocket holster or in even some of these are used inside the waistband. So with the firearm inside of it, okay, the trigger is completely, you cannot introduce anything. You can't get anything into the trigger well. So, you still have grip to the firearm itself. You can still pull the firearm. Usually these are made out of a sticky material that'll stay in your pocket, so you don't pull it out with the holster with it. But you cannot accidentally have a set of car keys or something else in there, get inside there and get where the trigger could be manipulated or pulled. Also, it's a good protection of the firearm too. So, you know, you don't have something getting wedged in the barrel that might be in your pocket or some females like in their purses or something, you know. So, it's introducing just a firearm into your pocket, into your waistband, into your, you know, briefcase, backpack, whatever, without having something, you know, covering it. Not necessarily a great idea. It's definitely better to protect it with a pocket holster or a concealment holster.
Well, I think that's a great explanation for what that is. It also deters from an imprint in your pocket, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So great stocking stuffer. I just want to throw that out there to Santa Claus because that's what I want.
That's what you want.
Well, I'm just throwing it out there.
If Santa's listening, Bo needs a pocket holster.
All right, Jesse, happy holidays to you. I'll see you real soon, okay?
Guys, happy holidays. Appreciate what you guys do. To everyone out there who supported 2A Radio, but also supported Razorback Armory, we thank you, and you guys all have a great holiday.
Absolutely.
You
bet. He's a blessed guy. Him and Brad do a great job over there. RazorbackArmory.com is where you can find him, and I guess that's going to do it.
It does it. All right. Another great edition of Second Amendment Radio. Guys, thank you. Have a great weekend. Be safe out there. We will see you next time around on Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors.
See you, boys. Going for another turkey sandwich.
Get more at 971talk.com.